Transmitting sound. Download complete. Now launching audio stream. It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
We've got a busy show this week. Up first is our smart shopper, Solmez McDaddy, talking about holiday shopping and how not to bust your budget to bits. Then we hear from our music editor, Sharon Hyland, about all the great new music coming your way from the likes of Christina Aguilera, Soundgarden, and a whole bunch more. Our relationship coach, Frank Kermit, stops in to talk about if you can really be happy being single. And then we wrap things up with a Love Zone with Gina Lee and a new remix from Girls Aloud, Something New.
Capture your need for sound.
It's that time of year again. We've wrapped up Halloween and the holiday shopping season is underway. To help us get organized and know how best to tackle the season is our smart shopper, Solmez McDaddy of MySweetDeals.ca. Solmez, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
So Solmez, as you know, we know here on the program, you're definitely an expert on finding good deals and being a smart shopper. And right off the hop, as we start talking about holiday shopping, what is your most important tip as we march into this holiday shopping season?
Well, I think the most important tip is to listen to your loved ones. So try and pick up on things that they want. And it could be really easy, like it could be really hard. But if you just listen to them and then they'll drop, oh, I'm really hoping I want to buy this item. But they not come out and say this is what I want. But for example, I've been wanting a crock pot for I don't know how long. And so I kept saying, I have to buy a crock pot. You know, fall's around the corner. I want to buy a crock pot. And next thing I knew, my sister had surprised me for my birthday with a crock pot. And so I wasn't dropping any cues, and she really surprised me. It was a perfect gift that she couldn't have gotten for me. So for Christmas, I think that's what you have to do. Listen and then make a list right away. As soon as you hear, oh, I think she'd want this, write it down, and that would be my most important tip.
Now, I think a lot of us are behind schedule with the gift buying, and then, you know, we start snapping things up left, right, and center when we actually do head out there. This has to be hard on our wallets if we're maybe putting ourselves under the gun like that.
Yeah, and that's why you have to make a budget. I mean, we said it over and over, budget, it's important, but it's so easy to get carried away. You walk into the stores, promotion here, promotion there, buy one, get the other one half off, and so when do you stock? And so that's why it's really important to stick to your budget. And if anything, I think the idea is not to overspend. The idea is to get things people want. And if you feel like, I feel like I'm not buying enough for that person. Like I'm just spending $20 when I think I should be spending $50. Well, you can make it a complete gift by buying them. If they like chocolates, why not throw in a little package of chocolates? But the idea is really the thought that counts. I'm big on that, and then respect your budget. And if Christmas comes and goes and you've gotten them a smaller gift, but you see something that you think they might like in January, well, maybe you can get it for them then and surprise them. Why not, you know?
Now, everyone in North America, it seems, you know, gets excited for Black Friday and Cyber Monday. Are they really that important to get excited for? Do you actually really get good deals, or is it a lot of hype?
You know, it used to be that you got amazing deals. Those were the best deals that you can get, at least Black Friday, and then later on Cyber Monday came along. But I don't think it's as we speak, because we've got this the group saving websites year long. Every day there's a deal of the day. So Black Friday, they do have the door crasher, really low prices. And if you're looking for something specific and you see that's on the door crasher item, then yes, I would say definitely it's worthwhile. But those are usually made to attract people so that you can come into the store or browse the website and buy potentially a lot more, in which case the other items are probably not as well discounted. So what you want to do is keep an eye out for good deals all year round. And if what you're looking for happens to be on sale Black Friday, great. I'm not one to want to go into those stores and wake up at midnight and wait in line. That's not my deal. That I don't think you can save enough, but it all depends on what you're looking for.
I actually wanted your opinion on something with regards to that, you know, people getting up at all crazy times of the morning to get in line and to get ready to go, or waiting in line overnight. I watched a TV report about a week ago, I guess, where they were talking about how some big stores, in preparation for Black Friday, are letting their employees know that they're actually opening way earlier than they had in previous years. And some of these employees are actually not going to be able to get to spend time for American Thanksgiving with their families because they're going to have to go into work. Now, my question to you is, do you actually think that it's of benefit that these stores are opening even way earlier? Or again, do you think it's because some of these big stores are trying to combat, you know, the economic situation that we're in, and they're just trying to capitalize and hype it up some more?
Yeah, I think they're definitely trying to capitalize on the fact that it's in people's minds that Black Friday is the best time to shop. I believe it to be a myth in today's day and age. I don't believe in that anymore. And so it used to be that you had Thanksgiving dinner, at least American Thanksgiving dinner with your family. Same thing goes for Christmas. And then Black Friday, Boxing Day came along and you got these great deals. If you're not even able to spend this one day a year, 2 days a year with your family because you're up prepping for the enormous amount of people to come by, and the deals aren't that great even. Like, if they were, then that's one thing. And I'm not saying that none of these stores have these amazing deals. I'm sure some of them do, but generally speaking, I'm not buying it.
And would your opinion on this Black Friday business, is it more of an electronics thing, or is it all types of goods that they're trying to say that they have deals on?
Well, I feel like it's more an electronics thing. And I'll tell you, last year, I decided to go see it for myself, went down to New York, had never been shopping on Black Friday in the U.S. because that's where it is pretty big, although it's getting bigger in Canada as we know it. But I was shopping for clothing, and I didn't see anything amazing, anything extraordinary, really. I was looking for a backup drive, which I got a good deal on, but was it better than what I could have gotten at another time frame that they would have had that on sale? Again, I'm not sure. I might have even gotten it at a better deal. So I think it's definitely more electronic. So the Best Buy, the Future Shops, they seem to slash their prices, but then again, on certain items.
Joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show is our smart shopper, Solmaz McDaddy of MySweetDeals.ca. You can also learn more about Solmaz on our website, KellyAlexanderShow.com. She's one of our contributors. Solmaz, what's your take on online shopping this year? Now, I know, you know, people are used to online shopping, but it seems that things change a little bit as years progress, like there's better apps or things go faster. Have you noticed anything that stood out to you this year?
I mean, yeah, you've got the apps that, I mean, it's so high tech nowadays. You could just go to a store and scan it, and I don't know, it sends it to your inbox. There's all these fancy apps that I don't really even use, but I know that I love online shopping. If you're in a rush and you've got this list and you want to just browse and compare, if you're in a store and you have to go to the different store to compare the prices, it's not as easy. So I definitely think if you're someone with a busy schedule, kids, you know, I have to go home, cook and clean and work, well, then that online shopping is definitely a great way to go. And a lot of companies offer a price match policy even online. So if you see a price that's cheaper elsewhere, but for example, Amazon.com offers free shipping when you purchase over X amount. Well, you can phone them up, say, well, this website is offering the same item for cheaper, and then they should be able to match it. So very efficient. You can do that from home or from work and get it delivered right to your door.
Now, I think no one really wants to say the R word, like recession. No one wants to say that because we sort of went through that in the last couple of years and things looked a little bit better. And now we're not so sure where things are going. And then everyone's talking about this fiscal cliff with regards to the American situation. But again, we know that overseas things aren't going well. So all in all, I think people are being mindful again this Christmas of their budgets and where they're going as they march into 2013. So with that in mind, do you have any tips on gifts that are not going to break the bank?
Yeah, well, you know what? Do it yourself is really big these days. I don't know if you're on Pinterest or if people know what Pinterest is. It's a really cool social networking site where people just pin pictures of things that are interesting. So it's a picture, and then you can click on it, and it relays you back to a website. So a lot of do-it-yourself ideas on there. For example, you know, if you want to save money, you could make truffles. So that's like an idea. I've never made truffles, but if I pour my heart into this and I offer to my friends, you put a nice little packaging with a nice little bow. I think that's an idea that no one can say, well, I can't believe she gave me, you know, she slaved all day to make me these truffles, you know, no matter if they're that good or not. I think that those kind of ideas, the do-it-yourself, you can make jewelry or even, you know, fill up a mason jar with like hot chocolate and marshmallows and you do the different layers and then do a specialized name tag with that person that you're offering the gift to. So I think it's all in the packaging. It's all in the time that you spend pouring into for this specific person. I think that those are really nice gifts. If you're not so handy doing these do-it-yourself, Etsy.com is a website that you can go on, and it's a lot of gifts that are do-it-yourself, but other people, they have their own little shops, if you will, sort of like an eBay, but that people do make themselves. And so you can purchase gifts for relatively good prices, and I think that that shows that you've thought and effort for your loved ones.
Now, if you do decide to splurge, is there a hot ticket, you know, for Christmas 2012?
The iPad Mini just came out, and I think that's a pretty cool gift because it's tech-related, as you were saying, with the apps and this and that. It's just so great. If you're traveling, you can just download your movie. You can play games. You can listen to your music. Like that is definitely a splurge worthy item.
Do you happen to know the price range on that? You know, I know there's the 16 gig and the 32 gig, I would assume. I'm assuming because I haven't looked into it very much. But I guess there's a price range where it's probably obviously more affordable than going for the full-on iPad.
It's around the $300 mark.
Oh, fantastic. So it definitely is in, you know, it's not, it's a bit pricey, but it's not, you know, like $800 pricey.
No, exactly. It's still a lot cheaper than the regular iPad. So it's, you know, you're splurging, and but it's not over and beyond. I think that for the functions that it has, it's definitely worth it. And if not, you could always look at another tablet on the market, because now we know a lot of tablets are out on the market and they're trying to beat their prices. But that's a pretty cool gift for Christmas.
Fantastic. Now, regarding gifts in general for kids, is there like a hot ticket there that people should be on the lookout for?
There is. And I'm not big on game consoles, but I know that the Wii U will be available on November 18th, and that is the hot ticket item for kids this Christmas. So if they're into video games, this Wii U is apparently the cool gift to get.
Okay. Now, you and I always end up discussing this because I think we care about our ladies out there as well as our men, and the fact that, you know, they're in relationships and, you know, it's so easy to get caught in a rut doing the same old, same old. So what's your advice for that, for, you know, for a special gift for your special someone?
I think, you know, the idea of giving a gift with a memory is really special. I think that is something that you'll treasure forever. So they can give jewelry. We all love jewelry, or the great massage, couples massage. But if you spend a weekend together, if you give each other the gift of time by combining the material gift, because it's nice to keep as a memento, that I think is one of the best gifts that you could give your better half, especially if it's giving them something that you know that you don't like doing,
right?
So if you're sacrificing your time because you love them and you want to spend time with them doing something that they love, that is a great gift.
Okay. Now, I know that one of the things that you and I like to point out when it comes to Christmas shopping, and I'm going to let you take over for this, but, you know, it's not to have any January regret.
You want to make sure that you don't get caught up with everything that's Christmas, because, you know, Christmas spirit, it's all around you, it's magical, we feel like we're invincible, and so that plastic becomes like our best friend, and we just keep swiping it, trying to make our loved ones feel special and feel loved, because we do love them. But don't get caught up in it, and stay true to your budget, because January will come around and surprise you if you haven't stuck to it, and then that's not a good feeling, because December will have been just magical, and January definitely won't.
Sol Maz, you are a rock star. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Kelly.
That's our smart shopper, Sol Maz McDaddy, again, of My Sweet Deals. You can check her out on mysweetdeals.ca, as well as on our website, kellyalexandershow.com.
Capture your need for sound.
Taking a look at what is going on in the world of music is our music editor, Sharon Hyland.
Well, everyone, it's the great rock return of Soundgarden. King Animal comes 16 years after their last album. Now, Soundgarden's focus remains intact. Chris Cornell recently said that making sure they were doing the right thing for their fans weighed on their process of making this album, but there's no worry there. With the first single rocking a "Man, it's good to have them back" vibe, and appropriately titled "Been Away Too Long." Christina Aguilera proves that vocally she can keep up with what the new artists are trying to capture today, and it is important to remember that Aguilera has a fantastic and naturally powerful voice, regularly setting the bar for the aforementioned new artists. Her co-workers on The Voice, CeeLo Green and Blake Shelton, both duet with her on her seventh album called Lotus. YouTube star Lana Del Rey has a new EP called Paradise. Used to be that eight songs would be called a full album, but I guess we need more than that now. She co-wrote all but the cover of the 50s classic Blue Velvet. You can expect the same torchy delivery with the implied golden era glare on this album. Rihanna, Unapologetic, which might describe the attitude toward the behavior during a potentially grueling 777 tour, seven shows in seven cities, and the flight number 777. You get it. Toronto, Stockholm, Paris, Berlin, London, and New York. The title of the album might also describe her attitude for doing the same old, but you know what? It's okay when the same old works like it does for Rihanna. Three Doors Down with a greatest hit CD, the best of their five albums so far, and at least one new song on it. Okay, so picture it. Back in 2007, 20 million people entered a lottery to see Led Zeppelin live at the O2 in London. Robert Plant, Jimmy Page, and John Paul Jones reuniting together to honor Atlantic Records founder Ahmet Erdogan. So Jason Bonham would fill his dad's spot on drums. He was the late John Bonham, of course. So of those many millions, 18,000 got to see the show live, with the rest of us experiencing it at home, whenever we want. The concert DVD called Celebration Day also comes with a CD if you don't actually want to see how their hair is much lighter than it once was. Coldplay concert film is out too on DVD, a culmination of shows in Paris, Montreal, and Glastonbury from the summer of 2011, which is when the Milo Xylito tour started. About 3 million people have seen the positivity that a Coldplay concert experience provides, and having been one of them, I totally recommend this. The CD is available too. Rockers are also happy to hear the Thunder from Down Under live. AC/DC's live at River Plate, closing a 20-year window since their last live album, and they're in fine form. We got lots of new stuff coming for the holidays, so until next time, when we'll get that final album in the trilogy of Green Day albums, which was actually bumped up a few weeks so it could be released in 2012, and Bruno Mars. Unorthodox Jukebox features a gorilla on the cover. Not sure if it's the same one used on the cover of Rolling Stone's new Greatest Hits CD, though it's probably not important to know that. We'll see you next time.
I came in tonight to get you out of my mind.
relationship coach Frank Kermit is joining us today to talk about being single. When we consider all the hassles and sometimes pain that a person can go through in the dating process, is being single really all that bad? Frank, welcome back to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Hi, Kelly. Great to be here.
So, Frank, is it possible to be single and still be happy?
Absolutely. It's just as possible to be in a relationship and be miserable. Just because you're single or just because you're in a relationship is no guarantee of happiness. And if you make that assumption going in, you might be surprised to find out the opposite.
And do you think that for those people who are comfortable with being single, can they ever get out of that comfort zone and date again? Or are they just going to stay in that, you know, rut that's not a rut according to them?
Well, it really depends why they want to be forever single. There are those people who basically, they've just given up on finding love and they're miserable at the concept. So they say, I'm going to be single basically because they have too much pain associated with seeking out relationships. And then there are those people who really, they're just happier not being in a serious relationship. Sometimes they're just happier not being in a relationship at all. One of the signs to look for is somebody speaking negatively about relationships. If they're speaking negatively about relationships, chances are they associate some form of pain with seeking out relationships. If, however, they're speaking positively about relationships, saying, look, relationships are great, they're wonderful, it's just not for me, that's a pretty good sign that someone is happily single because it suits their lifestyle, it suits what they want to do and helps them meet those goals.
In your experience, Frank, have you ever met a significant amount of people that are actually happy being single, or is it more of that complain type that, you know, they're saying they're okay, but really they're not?
Well, as a relationship coach and natural therapist, nobody comes to me if they're happy being single. You know, I have people who come to me and say that they're pretty much given up on relationships, they've given up on their love life, and they're very down about it. So if they're coming to me, it means that they're still hopeful that they still might be able to figure out how to get into a relationship and how to make it work. Those people who are truly happy being single don't seek out relationship coaches.
Okay, that's fair. That's true, and that's something to think about. How much harder is it for someone who has been single for a long time to find someone? Because, like, I guess just like anything, you're out of practice.
Oh, it's actually much more difficult. The longer you're out of the game, so to speak, the harder it is to get back in. And it isn't because a person doesn't desire companionship. It isn't because a person stops desiring sex or intimacy. It's because people get comfortable with their situation. And even those people who study success, whether it be financial success, health success, there's a major concept that says, stay out of your comfort zone. Always be just outside of your comfort zone. Same thing happens with relationships. When you've been alone for a long, long time, you get comfortable being alone. You may not be thrilled about the situation, but it's familiar. It's comfortable. You know what to expect. And when you try to challenge that by saying, okay, I've got to get myself back out there. I want to start going out on dates. I want to go out on blind dates. I'm going to ask my friends to set me up. I'm going to try speed dating. I'm going to try just talking to a stranger at a cafe. These things, although they have the potential of allowing you to really connect with someone, it's still incredibly scary and it doesn't feel right. It's going to feel awkward, not because what you're doing is bad, but because it's unfamiliar. And when you do something that is unfamiliar, it forces you out of that comfort zone.
Joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show, relationship coach Frank Kermit. You can check him out, franktalks.com. Do you really need to have or have been in a good relationship to feel as though, you know, we've had some level of success in love and relationships?
Generally speaking, if you're in a good relationship, you at least know what is possible. If you've ever been in a relationship where you truly felt loved and you truly felt that your love was returned and it built you up, it gave you some sense of self-esteem, it actually strengthened your self-worth, then it's going to be easier for you to seek out a new relationship because you have positive associations with relationships and dating. If you've only ever had bad experiences, that's when you start thinking that everybody is the same and all relationships suck and so on and so forth. The fact is that maybe you just don't know how to choose the right partners to date. If you've had bad experiences, it's going to sour you and make it a little bit more difficult to find motivation.
Is that the common denominator, Frank, to keep in mind that if you do have a string of bad relationships, you might need to point the finger back at yourself and not at everyone else?
Oh, Kelly, you hit the nail on the head. When you want to enter into any sort of coaching or any sort of self-actualization work, the first thing you need to understand is that you are the common element in every relationship you've ever had. Now, if you've only had, let's say, two or three relationships, and you know your first relationship, you could say, well, that person was just a mean person. You get into your second relationship, oh, that person was a con artist. They knew how to lie to me. When it keeps happening to you over and over and over, and you have a string of bad relationships, you got to look at the common element. Common element is you. And you have to figure out, what is it that you're missing? What red flags are you not spotting? What behavior patterns are you exhibiting that is attracting these kind of people to you? That's where we begin our work.
I suppose, as in anything in life, your outer demeanor can maybe attract some of these people that you don't want as well. Like, I'm assuming if, you know, you're not feeling well with yourself, you know, you might fall prey to these people as well.
In my work, I call it the attraction mechanism. Everybody has an attraction mechanism. It's going to decide who it is that you're going to feel attracted to and who you're going to attract to you. If you've got a vibe, and I'm using the word vibe for lack of a better term, if you've got a certain vibe where you really don't like yourself, you're only going to be attracted to people who are going to treat you in exactly the same way that you value yourself. So when you want to start thinking about, how do I start dating better people? One of the first things that I encourage people to do, and nobody's happy about this, by the way, I tell people, when you're really, really attracted to someone, take that as a red flag. And maybe the best thing you can do is try dating people that you're not necessarily attracted to. Don't go after your type if every time you've dated your type it hasn't worked out. It means your attraction mechanism needs some tweaking. And the way that you fix that is that you start dating people that you're not necessarily attracted to so that you get used to being treated well in a relationship. Once you can start associating positive feelings, positive associations with being treated well in a relationship, that's when you can start to train yourself to be attracted to those people who would be better long-term partners for you.
Do you find, Frank, long-term single people, again, I suppose if they fall under the radar of or under the category of not dealing with stuff, they're the ones that need to be doing this sort of, you know, self-actualization?
In the sense that if someone is going through something really bad or they're miserable or they're unhappy, then yes, they do need to come to some sort of self-actualization. They have to go through that process because they are in charge of their lives. They are in charge of the decisions that they make. And if the decisions that they've made have led them to a bad place, we got to look at what's behind that and see what we can do about fixing that.
Now, I actually have a friend right now who is single. She was in a relationship just last year for about a year and a half, and things didn't work out. She actually moved in with him, sort of knowing it probably wasn't a good idea. And then sure enough, within 8 weeks, she realized, you know, she should have trusted her gut to begin with. But at least she said that she knew at that point she had tried everything. So she got out of it, moved out of there. And now she actually is exuding very happy and healthy, at least to me, behaviors, and is quite happy to be single right now.
It sounds to me that she went through a process where she broke a repeating behavior pattern. Let's look at what she did. She knew on some level that moving in with her partner was a bad choice. On some level, though, she said, well, what if it's my own doubts? What if I'm just, you know, what if I just have cold feet? So she pushed herself to the limit to say, no, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to try as hard as I can to make this work, even though I have serious doubts. Well, she did try it. It didn't work out. She moved out. But look at what she learned. She learned that the next time she gets that signal on the inside that says, no, this is not going to work, she's going to learn to trust it. And if you're trying to figure out why she's so happy right now in her life, She's learned that she could trust herself. She's reached a point of redemption. She's broken the repeating behavior pattern. She now can trust herself not to make that same mistake again, because instead of continuing to stay in that bad situation, which is what some people do, and to their credit, they're doing it out of the best of intentions. They get into a bad situation and they keep trying and they keep trying and they keep trying, wanting to make it work. And, you know, God bless them. Their intentions are really good, but the result isn't always good. She broke that pattern. She pulled herself out of a bad situation, and now she knows she can trust herself. What a wonderful time in her life this is.
And it's funny, Frank, because she does feel like she's in a really good time. But my next sort of point that I want to ask you is the fact that, you know, so she's been alone, I think it's probably about 9 months now, you know, enjoyed the summer being single, all that sort of stuff. And, you know, now she's finding that a bunch of her friends that are coupled up, as well as certain family members, are starting to get on her case and trying to, you know, force her into thinking like, well, it's time to get back on the horse. It's time to, you know, get yourself back into a relationship.
Okay, look, when other people are trying to encourage a single person to get into a relationship, sometimes the motivations are very legitimate. The person is thinking, well, I love this person and I want this person to be happy, and I think that that person being in a relationship will make that person happy. So there could be some very good intentions behind there. There could also be some very not so good intentions. Maybe her parents are saying, no, no, we want to become grandparents, so you got to get married and start having kids. Sometimes it's because people are just jealous. I see that you're single. I see that you're having fun. I see you have a great life that I'd want to have, but I didn't get that because I got into a relationship because I felt I had to, and I don't want you to be happy when I don't get to be happy. We never know what other people's motivations really are. It's great that if we take the assumption that they just want us to be happy. If you can decipher the fact that the motivations behind everybody trying to encourage her is, we want you to be happy and we think that a relationship would make you happy, you take it for what it is. You say, thanks a lot, I really appreciate it, but I'm not interested. If you feel that the motivations are underhanded, if you feel that the motivations are anything less than a genuine concern for your happiness, that's when you have to consider whether or not to even involve these people in your life, or maybe to put some distance from that toxic behavior.
Do you think, Frank, that, you know, if you do have a single friend, that you should get involved and try to help set them up? Or is that, you know, again, a place where you need to be a good friend and realize maybe they need to be alone right now?
If you want to be a very good friend, the best thing you can do is to talk to your friend and say, listen, would you be interested in meeting someone? And let that person decide.
Okay.
I have set up my friends on every occasion possible. Sometimes I'll be dating someone and we find out within the first two or three dates, look, we're really not connecting here. This relationship just simply can't go anywhere. Our values are just too incompatible. What I would do in those situations is I would say, tell me about what it is you're looking for. Because if one of my friends fits the bill, I'm more than happy to introduce you. But I wouldn't just set it up and force it on my friend. I would call up my friend and say, hey, listen, I met this person. This person says that they're looking for these qualities. I think you fit the bill. Would you be interested in meeting this person? If they say, hey, sure, why not? I'm happy. Come on over for a glass of wine. We'll watch a DVD. You can all get to know each other. And if they say, no, I'm really not interested in it. Okay, I tried, but when you are interested, you let me know. That's the best thing you can do. You offer it, but you have to respect a person's boundaries when they say no, that they're not interested. In my philosophy, however, especially if people are coming to me as the relationship coach, my belief is that if anybody wants to set you up with anybody, you take it. You go on one date. If nothing else, it'll be one evening where you're not spending time alone and you're getting to know somebody else and hopefully learning about yourself.
Frank, are there actually people out there who are just too, quote unquote, damaged to be in relationships? And when I say that, I mean either by their own dating history or, let's say they had a really difficult growing up experience where their own parents were a nightmare and they've learned bad behaviors.
Yes, there are some people who are too damaged to be in a relationship. One of the best examples of this is when people go into some kind of rehabilitation program to, let's say, get over an addiction. One of the tenets of any rehabilitation program that the person has to drop all contact with their relations. They have to not even potentially date somebody that they meet within the program. It's to force people to focus on themselves and not use a romantic interlude as a distraction. That's an example of someone being too damaged to get into a relationship. They need the time to heal. In other cases, sometimes people grow up in such horrible toxic environments that before they can even enter into a relationship involving another person into the intricacies of their life, they have to figure out their own boundaries. They have to figure out even just how to live a normal life, because it may not even be something that's second nature to them. What's second nature to a person who grew up in such a toxic environment is more toxic behaviors. And when you get into a relationship and you don't know what to do, people tend to revert back to these automated responses that have been programmed into them in those toxic environments. So you may not see yourself as a toxic person. You may think, I'm not going to be just like those people who raised me. But put yourself in a situation where you haven't really thought about what your own boundaries are. What principles do you want to live by? What ethics and morals do you want to follow? There's an incredibly high chance that you're going to repeat the same behavior patterns that you were exposed to. Not because you're a bad person, but because that's what's familiar to you. And people doing things that are unfamiliar gets back to that concept of stepping out of the comfort zone. Even when a familiar behavior is still the wrong behavior, because it's familiar, that's what makes it comfortable.
Frank, what's your stance on, you know, teenage relationships? Like, how important are they for your later years? Because, you know, sometimes when you're 14, 15, 16, you get into these big tragic romances or whatever. But I'm assuming they're actually learning tools that might actually help you later on when you're in your 20s and your 30s, because you've been through heartbreak.
This is such a challenging question. And that's because for a teenager, that new relationship that they're going through really is the defining point. Every person that they date afterwards is going to be compared to those first few relationships. So you're basically getting a clean slate and you're creating the model that everything else is going to be compared to. It could be a very powerful experience because for that teenager, it might really be their first experiences with love. Now, experience is a good thing if you have the context of understanding how to relate to that experience. What I mean is this. If you're a teenager and maybe you don't really have any knowledge of the world and you get into a relationship and something happens in that relationship which is really not appropriate, such as you sharing something with your partner and then your partner going around and blabbing it to the entire school, that's a completely inappropriate behavior. As a teenager, though, you might think, well, if I really love the person and they're treating me badly, I guess that I should just accept it, because when you love somebody, you have to accept these sort of behaviors, and it starts a cycle of when you love somebody, then when they do something bad, that becomes okay, and it's not okay. And an adult can understand that. An adult is expected to know better. An adult is expected to say, look, whether or not I love you doesn't change the fact that what you're doing is wrong, and if you mistreat me, then how I feel about you is irrelevant. That's an adult perspective, but chances are they may have learned that in other areas of their life. But when you're a teenager, you may not have the context, you may not have the maturity and the experience to interpret that. Now let's look at somebody who's in their 30s and it's their first serious relationship. They still may behave like a teenager in that respect. But because they're an adult and they're not in a social situation where the latest rumor could completely destroy their self-esteem, because at the age of 30, they're probably independent. They probably don't have the same type of peer pressure that a teenager does. It's a different experience. They may still make the same mistakes, but the consequences of those mistakes are different. That's why when I deal with parents and talk to their teenagers, I make them realize that the person that you're dating now, chances are, isn't going to be the person that you're going to marry and have kids with. So it's great that you're getting the experience, but keep it realistic. And if there's certain things that you really want to reserve for someone more serious in your life or who's got a higher chance of being there in your future, then you might want to hold off on certain things.
If you stay single throughout your teenage years, does that make things more difficult or easier when you're in your 20s?
I think that really depends on the experiences you've had as a teenager. I know that when I was a teenager, I got stood up at my prom. And prior to getting stood up at my prom, any interaction I had in trying to date was usually just generally negative because I had my own stuff to deal with. So when I got into my 20s and I was dating, the scars of being stood up at my prom and the scars from being made fun of when I admitted that I liked someone in my class, it did make it more difficult as an adult because I never had processed and never healed that pain. On the other hand, I took a lot of chances as a teenager. I would ask people out. I would go out on dates. I put myself out there so that when I was older, because I had the experience of already doing it, yes, I still had the scars, but I wasn't afraid of just the basic stuff, such as asking somebody out on a date. For those people who never gone out on a date in high school and now they end up in their early 20s, still having not gone going out on a date, there's an extra pressure of, well, I didn't screw it up before, but now I'm even more worried of screwing up. There's an entire branch of my practice where I deal with adult-aged virgins. And age 25 seems to be the age where it really hits them that if by the time they're 25 and they still haven't had any experience in the dating world, it's even more difficult for them to make that first step and to open up because by the age of 25, they feel the pressure that they should have already at least have had a boyfriend or girlfriend by that point. So there's pros and cons to either one.
Okay. Now, to wrap things up, you know, speaking of being single and all that that involves, in your mind, what's the biggest obstacle for single people? And what's, a positive thing for single people?
The biggest obstacle for single people, I would have to say that maybe the biggest obstacle for single people is that some people may not be ready to make the commitment necessary to make changes in their life. When you've been single for a long time, you've gotten comfortable being who you are and living the way you're living. Some of my client base are people who have been single for so long that the concept of even sharing a living space with another human being is just too much for them because they're in their routine. They're very happy with the routine, even though they get a little bit lonely. The concept that, well, your whole routine is going to change because now every time you want to make a major decision, you're trying to decide if you should fix the car or buy a new one. Well, if you're single, the only person you have to consult is you. When you have someone new in your life, well, you have to consult them too because there might be something that they need that's going to factor into whether or not you're going to spend that money or make the new investment. That's not easy for people who have been single for a long time and are trying to figure out if they want to get into a new relationship. There's a lot of work involved, especially when you have to get used to the idea that your expectations of being in a relationship are going to have to change. Because once you get into a real relationship, it's not the fantasy thing that you've viewed in the movies and have built up in your head, and there is no happily ever after. It's something that you're going to have to continually work on. There's ups and downs, and sometimes those down periods can be really bad to the point that you wish you were single again. But hey, you made the investment, and you part of that is that you agreed to try and stick it out as much as you can until the bad outweighs the good.
And a positive aspect, I guess, of being single? Learning about yourself, I guess.
A positive aspect about being single, from the people that I've met who are happy to be single, there's nothing stopping them from whatever it is they want to do. Whatever it is they want to do, they can live a certain lifestyle of freedom and adventure, especially if they don't have children. That means that if they decide to completely change their life, take their career in a brand new direction, take chances that might land them homeless, but if the chances work out, it could be great and wonderful. Those are freedoms that single people have that people in relationship don't always have. And if that's important to you, if living that kind of lifestyle where you don't want to have to make anybody else suffer for the mistakes you might make, you want to be able to take chances and decisions on a whim, and you don't want to have to worry about somebody else being affected by that, then being single might be the best thing for you.
Perfect. Frank, thank you so much for your time on this.
Kelly, this has been great. I can't wait to do your show again.
Fantastic. That is our relationship coach, Frank Kermit. For more information on relationships, make sure to check out his website, franktalks.com. You can also check him out on our website, kellyalexandershow.com.
Stand by.
The Love Zone with Gina Lee
on The Kelly Alexander Show.
Welcome to The Love Zone. I'm Gina Lee. When it comes to dating, do you have high standards? Do you have a strict criterion of what the person should be like, look like? When someone says, "I have high standards," we often take that to mean they're high maintenance, just looking for a trophy, or shallow. Why is that? Maybe it's the way these so-called standards are presented to us. Going down your list of must-haves can be daunting to a potential mate. It can range from personality and character traits like he or she must be funny, intelligent, and respectful, to material and physical attributes like he or she must make a certain amount of money, must drive a car, be a certain height, look a certain way. Of all those criteria, some are standards and some are just preferences. And when talking about dating, we often confuse the two, throwing everything under the category of standards. In my opinion, preferences are not standards, as they can be flexible. I mean, really, if someone is not as tall as you'd prefer, but has an amazing personality and character, that's not going to stop you from falling in love with them, is it? Now, if someone is disrespectful to you, and you have a standard of being treated respectfully, well then you're not going to be flexible about that, are you? Are you? Sometimes we are, and I'll talk about that in a moment. But the bottom line is, your standards should go deeper than the superficial. They are the codes you live by, and unlike preferences, they are non-negotiable. So, what are your standards? Can you list them in clear and definite terms? Think about what is important for you to live a happy and fulfilled life, and take stock of what you're doing to achieve or maintain that. And once you start thinking in that direction, your standards become clear, and you naturally seek to include people in your life who are in line with them. But remember, before you can apply any standard to those you have relationships with, you must be able to live up to those standards yourself. If you need a partner who's funny, cultivate your sense of humor. If you're looking for someone who's intellectually engaging, sharpen your mind. Want someone who's healthy and fit? Hit the gym. You get the idea. If you just speak your standards and don't live them, then you're most likely to abandon them. And this brings me back to the question I raised earlier about being flexible in your standards. In the beginning stages of a relationship, we all want to make a great impression and be seen as a good catch. Sometimes this results in making a lot of compromises to the standards you've set, bending the rules of engagement in order to keep the peace and capture that person's love. Yes, you might keep them, but you'll lose yourself in the process. So don't sell yourself short. If you've done enough soul searching and have a firm understanding of what you need in order to thrive in a healthy relationship, stick with it. Don't break your code in order to accommodate someone who isn't compatible with you anyway. It won't play out very well and you'll end up not being very happy. So if you're not feeling good about the direction your dating life is going in, I suggest you sit down and reevaluate your standards.
Yeah.
thank you going out to my guests, Solmaz McDaddy, Frank Kermit, Sharon Hyland, and Gina Lee. Here's your inspirational quote of the week, this time coming from Conrad Hilton. Success seems to be connected with action. Successful people keep moving, they make mistakes, but they don't quit. Now, next week on the show, we have some awesome guests, including clinical sexologist Dr. Renee Lanctot, talking about sexual economics, and I'll let her explain what that is. It is very, very fascinating. Can't wait for you to join us. Also, don't forget to check us out on our website. There's always lots of content going on, blogs and quotes and videos. Check it out, KellyAlexanderShow.com. You can also follow us on Twitter, at KAlexandershow, as well as checking out our YouTube channel, where we've put up our really cool and really in-depth interview with Boys to Men. They're awesome, and they've got a lot of great things to say about being in the music business for over 20 years. If you have any comments or questions, as always, drop me a line, Kelly at KellyAlexandershow.com. Have an awesome week. You and I will chat soon.